Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly broadcasting live from the Internet Law Center here in Santa Monica, the heart of Silicon Beach. Please be seated. We got a great show for you today. And we're going to be talking with Charlie Mitchell. He is the author of the freshly printed on June 20th. So if you buy your copies now, you can probably still smell the ink of the book Hacked. The Inside Story of America's Struggle to Secure Cyberspace. And Charlie is someone who, when he says inside story, he is inside. Charlie has been covering Capitol Hill for years, both as an editor with Roll Call, and he's now editor of Inside Cybersecurity. And so, Charlie, are you with us?
I am here. Thank you, Bennett.
Thank you for joining us. And you know, so I wanted to emphasize the inside because I looked at your background working with Roll Call, which those of you who are may not outside the Beltway may not be familiar with, is like the Capitol Hill newspaper. And he also worked with Congress Daily, which I remember when I worked for a lobbyist was the must read every morning. And now you've been working with Inside Cybersecurity, a respected blog newsletter that is widely followed. So what led you to write this book?
Well, Bennett, we started covering cybersecurity. We were doing it in really a piecemeal fashion here at Inside Washington Publishers. And, you know, we covered defense policy and health policy and environment policy. And cybersecurity kept popping up in each of these realms. And a number of senior folks here eventually decided to put together a news service, Inside Cybersecurity, devoted specifically to how the federal government was addressing this and what its expectations were for companies and what the laws were and that sort of thing. And out of that grew the idea for the book. You know, my day-to-day coverage was just showing a lot of the tensions and a lot of the there were just crazy things that were standing between doing the right thing, if you will. I mean, on Capitol Hill, you had jurisdictional fights that were just bogging down legislation, and so Congress couldn't do anything about it. The Department of Homeland Security was kind of staggering around without much direction on what it should do, and it really seemed that the private sector had little idea of what the government expected from them in this area, and yet the private sector owns 90%+ of the critical infrastructure in this country that is subject to attack. They own, you know, all of the retail sector. And these are the people who are getting slammed. And it wasn't really clear what they were expected to do about it, who was responsible, who was liable for these things, what's the government's role. And I tried to pull this all together in a story that would show who some of the good guys were, who some of the bad guys were, what the institutional problems were that were really preventing us as a nation from tackling a problem that's affecting every one of us and is going to affect every one of us for years and years to come.
Now, it's interesting, and a good point to start in every story is the beginning. And just by way of reference, I remember on one of my reactions, visceral reactions on 9/11, having lived in Washington, although I was in California at the time, was seeing the Pentagon hit was the feeling that the Pentagon was impenetrable, you know, and that was something that we, you know, could never be hit, and just a feeling of vulnerability, knowing that people can get to the Pentagon. And I mention that because your story, when I say start at the beginning, your story opens with a hacker getting through to the CIA director, John Brennan.
Right.
And I mean, if we're going to talk about right. cybersecurity, if you're going to tag one person, that, I mean, other than the president of the United States, that's a pretty good person to tag. And was that like a, you know, We're Completely Naked moment?
That was a completely naked moment, and it really highlighted one thing in particular, and that's the fact that sloppy cyber hygiene is perhaps the number one culprit here. And this is, for all of their degrees and expertise and all of this, the top-notch cybersecurity professionals will tell you that the most important thing that you can do is practice basic cyber hygiene. Change your passwords, use hard-to-crack passwords, and it's a pain in the neck, and that's why people don't do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can avoid using 77777 as your password, you will have actually taken a pretty good step to secure yourself. So what Brennan was doing was being as careless and sloppy as any average citizen. And the thing is, you don't always think that, oh, you know, in my Gmail account, I happen to have some things that have credit card numbers, that may have my social security number in there. I may have old emails that have really important financial information in them, for example. And so once somebody cracks that and gets into it, they have free rein. And you're talking here about the CIA director. So
right, yeah.
I don't know that he was putting any classified information on there, but holy cow, do you want to risk that, right?
Now, and your book kind of follows a progression, you know, from that event until ultimately, you know, Congress actually acting on cybersecurity. And it seems there's an arc going on here of one, first, maybe it's kind of an Elizabeth Kubler-Ross analogy or something, but, you know, recognizing there's a problem, deciding to talk about it, deciding, and then getting ultimately do something about it. It seems like that was a prolonged process.
It was a very prolonged process, and you had, going back to the first years of the Obama administration, there was a lot of talk about this, and it took a couple of years before people settled on the general idea of a policy direction. And then it really took 5 solid years to get something through Congress to address this. And as is often the case with Congress, as you well know, by the time they get around to acting, the problem has changed and it's evolved. But they did, at the end of last year, pass the Cybersecurity Act of 2015, and the central feature of this was to encourage information sharing about cyber threats and cyber threat indicators is what they call the kind of the telltale signs of a cyber attack. And the thinking is that you can create what some refer to as a national weather map of cyber threats, and that if policymakers and technologists and security specialists have access to that sort of information, then you can head off attacks, you can identify the signs of attacks, and you can respond more quickly, and you can let others know that, hey, this vicious piece of malware is out there, you need to be aware of it, and you can put your defenses up. So now they've added these liability protections for companies to participate in that kind of process. Companies have said before, you know, I don't want to share information because it may end up getting me sued. It may end up getting me in the crosshairs of some government agency that wants to regulate me. So now they have all this protection against that. And we're at the very beginning. We're going to see how this works, and we're going to see if this actually improves security. Companies are just now getting comfortable with the idea of participating. It's been a very, very slow start. The law is 6 months old,
right. So
that's not very long, but companies have been pretty hesitant, and companies have said, you know, my general counsel says I shouldn't share any of this information with the government, that they don't believe in the liability protection. So departments like the Department of Justice and Homeland Security, they've put out more and more. They keep putting out guidances saying, no, 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 this is for real. You're really protected here. You don't have to worry about getting sued. But, you know, people are skeptical.
So they have to do Skype calls so they can see if their fingers aren't crossed. I guess maybe that's the next step.
Right.
But it seems that.
Right, exactly.
As part of the journey, I mean, I remember distinctly. Let me back up. I remember in the midterm, you know, the 2004, I was trying to tell people and out here in tech that we got to pay attention to Washington because they're going to do stuff that's really going to change our business models. And if you're not paying attention, they're going to do it for you. And I remember being at a tech policy conference in 2004. Some guy bragged, a CEO bragged about not paying attention to Washington. They're irrelevant. And very quickly, they realized how wrong they were, and you saw Google and everyone else ramp up. In 2012, I mean, not that long ago, I was at a tech policy conference in Silicon Valley, and everyone wanted to talk about SOPA and privacy. And there was this, I think it was a Pricewaterhouse or some survey of CEOs, and 80% of the CEOs said that they don't think they're doing enough on cybersecurity. And I raised the question to one of the panels, what can we do to change that? Clearly, this is not an incentive. Somehow the marketplace is not rewarding smart decisions on cybersecurity. What should we be doing? And I got like a two-sentence answer saying, well, that's not really an interesting topic. We're not really concerned about that. Right. We're going to talk about SOPA. And I was just stunned. And clearly we've made some progress. But this seems to be this a slow recognition of the problem. I think of all involved. I think the tech community, I think the CEOs, because I think to a certain degree, it sounds like, and you've mentioned this yourself in your opening comments, that they want this voluntary system. Don't tell us what we have to do. Let us give you information, and you give it back to us, but don't make us actually do anything.
Right, right. And that is a major tension within the business community. A lot of people have said, well, I mean, I'm probably not a target, and why should I make these huge investments? And it does cost a lot of money to be cybersecure if you're a corporation.
Right.
But there is a strong sense within major business organizations and within the major industrial sectors here that they need to really take charge, and they need to stand up, or somebody else is going to do it for them. And this is a kind of a constant theme, and it's a theme in the book, and it's a constant theme that I see in my day-to-day coverage for Inside Cybersecurity, that industry leaders are trying to tell their rank and file and their memberships at places like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, if we don't do this, the government is going to step in and direct us to do it and tell us exactly how to do it. And that's going to be a disaster, because the response to cybersecurity needs to be nimble, and it needs to be innovative, and it needs to be flexible and move and all of that. And if you write these things into typical government regulations, you get a rigid checklist type approach that just doesn't really fit with the cybersecurity challenge. On the other hand, it's really imperative that the business community demonstrate that it's actually doing something. It isn't enough for them to say, hey, we'll take care of it. You don't worry about it. They need to prove to the government. They need to prove to their regulators that they are taking steps and that they do have this under control. And how you actually do that is just an ongoing challenge here. And it shakes out across all major industry sectors, the communication sector, the energy sector, the financial sector, which is constantly under cyber attack, as you can imagine. So it's interesting. There are a lot of very creative approaches that are going on. There are a lot of industry groups that are spending an awful lot of time, frankly, trying to reach out to their rank and file and encourage them to use certain steps, to take advantage of certain programs, to do all of these voluntary things and use these available tools. And the message on the other side of that is, please, folks, do this, or else we're going to get hit with some major regulation in this space at some point in the upcoming years.
And you make an important point, I think. You started highlighting some of the people that actually are doing things. And I think it's important in telling the story, and you do, is that, it's important to mention the problem. And clearly, you spell it out. But it's also important to mention that there are some people who are actually taking the lead. There are some heroes involved. And why don't you talk about some of them?
Sure. And that's both on the government side and on the private sector side.
Right.
And there are there are some folks on Capitol Hill who really get it, and they've been pushing for years to persuade their colleagues to take some innovative new approaches on that. And I would identify people like Tom Carper, the senator from Delaware, has just been issuing the call on the need to do something on this and coming up with creative ideas for years. And he's a Democrat. On the Republican side, Mike McCall from Texas is chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, and he has been a really innovative thinker on cyber policy. And I think that politically, you take two guys like Carper and McCall, and they are on absolute opposite sides of the spectrum on 99% of issues. But on cybersecurity, they're right there. It doesn't break down, or it doesn't have to break down in the usual partisan way. And I think they really demonstrate that. And they were driving forces behind getting the law through last year, as well as getting a law through the previous year that kind of cleaned up the way the government is organized to deal with cyber. As you can imagine, the government, it wasn't structured to deal with this issue. And so it has been structured very poorly for addressing this issue. And they took a real stab at trying to straighten that out. And I think they made a lot of improvements. It still needs to be implemented. Another body that I would really point to that is not well known is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which in one form or another has been around since Thomas Jefferson's time. I mean, they standardized the size of a gallon, for instance, but they have been very, very involved. They've gone from doing that and standardizing the size of an inch and a foot and all of that to getting way into the pool on cybersecurity, and they are doing some of the best thinking and strategizing and creating tools and all of that that's going on anywhere. And they developed the framework of cybersecurity standards, which you may hear bandied about. It's really this terrific organizing tool for taking a risk management based approach to cybersecurity. And this is something that's being promoted out to U.S. industry, and it's being promoted out around the world. And it's really offered as the main alternative to taking a more rigorous mandatory approach to cybersecurity. And so the message to companies is go out and use this framework, use these tools here, or else you're going to get regulated. So the folks at NIST have just been outstanding on this, and they engage with everybody, and they are one of the few agencies in the federal government that I would say has no enemies. they don't regulate, they don't sue anybody, they don't do that. They just kind of try to lend a helping hand, and it's really respected. And I think people on the industry side very much respect NIST, and people on the, in the privacy community, who folks there are often very much at odds with industry on cybersecurity approaches. They see NIST as an honest broker, so that's a terrific agency. And I would also say that there are a lot of technologists out there who are doing some fascinating work, and I think that this has been really embraced by the big trade associations. I mentioned the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. There are other groups like the U.S. Telecom Association, which represents, the phone companies and all, and others who decided, again, well, we really need to be out front on this, and we need to move, and we need to get our membership to recognize what's going on. And so they've launched major, major education campaigns to make their companies, from the largest to the smallest, aware of the threats, aware of the policy landscape, and to give them some very tangible steps that they can take to shore things up. So it took a while to really get the attention and get people focused on this, but to their credit, the bigger groups, once they did, they said, holy cow, we need to be very, very engaged on this, and we need to get out in front on this. And so that was impressive. So it's interesting to see a lot of people trying to do the right thing. And, Bennett, I mean, what is the problem with all of that going on? It's hard. It's complicated. It can cost money. People have other priorities. It doesn't immediately reflect in the bottom line. So I point out in the book that it's like you have this weird analogy between the private sector and Congress that you know it's important, but then another shiny object comes along and you're distracted. And so you don't do what you know you have to do in the cybersecurity space. You say, I'll get to that tomorrow. And then we have the next huge breach and it's a crisis atmosphere again.
Well, we're going to take a short break so I can see if there's an opening for Deputy Assistant Secretary of Gallons at National Institute of Standards.
Yes, right.
But when we come back, we're going to talk more about Hacked with Charlie Mitchell after these messages. You're listening to the Cyber Law and Business Report on Cranberry Radio.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart or you've read their SEO code of ethics, seen other SEO experts, but did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today. Today at BruceClay.com.
Looking for a white label SEO and social platform for your clients? Think
eBrands.
Bring in unlimited SEO audit reports.
eBrands.
Premium Facebook apps and welcome page creators.
eBrands.
Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators.
eBrands.
Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to ebrandswithaz.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for
eBrands.
Are you paying too much for your paid advertising, or have you quit altogether because it seemed like a huge waste of money? Studies show that companies waste 25% of their PPC spend on average. The web marketing experts at WMETraining.com can show you how to make your AdWords account a lean, mean converting machine. Whether you're just starting out or want to take your skills to the next level, we have a class for you. Contact the web marketing experts at WMETraining.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Here is Bennett Kelly.
And we're back and we're talking to Charlie Mitchell about his new book, Hacked. And we were talking about the National Institutes of Standards and Technology. And I'm sure when you turned on the
Love them,
today,
my favorite agency.
That's what you wanted to hear about. Actually, they did have a little bit of controversy and to the extent that they were allowing back doors as part of their standards
Yes, this came up, right?
And so
and they have – well, the question was whether the National Security Agency was influencing the way that they wrote standards for encrypted devices. And
right.
it – came out, and I believe this was part of the Snowden leaks. There were some papers that he leaked that suggested NSA had some influence here. The NIST folks have argued vehemently that they did not tamper with the standards in response to that kind of request from NSA, but they do acknowledge that NSA, like all other stakeholders, does. Yeah, they take an interest and they do make recommendations, and under the government procedures law, NIST has to consider their recommendations. But they say, and I can't prove it one way or another, but NIST says that they did not do this kind of deliberate tampering with the standards in order to create a backdoor for the NSA to get in. They say that absolutely didn't happen, but that's what was suggested in one of these Snowden leaks.
And what was shocking about it was precisely because of the point you just made. This was an agency that, if you had, I think we would have to, spend a week researching and maybe come up empty to find an agency that was as highly regarded and unblemished as this. And so
right.
that's why it was such
right.
a shock when it did come up. And so you were talking about the absence of regulation and the fact that you know, working with the standard setup, you know, the framework that NHTSA set up, is a way for businesses to forestall possible regulation at some point. At the same time, there is this body called the Federal Trade Commission. And what role do you see them as having in this process? And and where do you think we would be if they didn't exercise that role?
Right. That's a great question. And there is a chapter in HACT specifically about the FTC, and it proclaims itself the watchdog for consumers in cyberspace. And it has taken some very aggressive actions, enforcement actions against companies that employ poor cybersecurity, for, you know, companies that handle consumer data. They take this action under the FTC Act of saying that they have the right to enforce against, you know, false and misleading statements. And so they'll look at a company and say, you have led your customers to believe that you have safe cyber practices, and yet you were breached and you were employing weak practices. And so, boom, we're going to take an action against you and drag you into court. And they have done this on repeated occasions, and it's an important role. I would say that the weakness of this approach, though, the strength is that it puts companies on notice that somebody is watching and somebody has authority to really try to nail you to the wall if you're mishandling or carelessly handling consumer data. The weakness of it, though, I would say, is that it's a case-by-case approach. And so the expectations are not entirely clearly spelled out, and it's not spelled out in a coherent way or a comprehensive way, if you will, so that you know how this applies in all different situations and whatever. It's only going to apply if you come to the attention of the FTC and they decide to go after you in a legal proceeding. That's where, you know, the certainty that you get from a regulatory regime is that's typically the strength and the benefit of a regulatory regime. Everybody knows what's expected of them, and they know the way the process plays out, and you have points of entry where you can come in to influence the rules and so forth. In an enforcement-based approach, it's a little more haphazard, and it's a little more, you know, it's not ad hoc, but it is case by case.
Because they don't.
That just isn't as certain.
They don't have rulemaking authority, and so that's part of the problem. But and it's kind of interesting because when I've met with legislators to talk about cyber policy, the one thing I've always tried to stress is regulate conduct, not technology, because regulating technology is like taking a picture. You can either take taking a picture of something in motion. You can take it and have it be blurry, or you can focus on that one moment and that moment's past. And that's kind of the risk of regulating technology. And the odd thing about the FTC actually, here you have a statute that was passed before automobiles and, you know, just regulate unfair conduct in interstate commerce. The one thing I will say, though, is I once argued that there is basically, even though they don't have that framework in codified form, you can look at the consent decrees, they're public, and see, okay, this is really what they're looking for. I mean, it is there, but unfortunately it isn't packaged in a way that's easily, you know, accessed. And maybe that's where they could use improvement.
Right. And you're also starting to get some big cases where the decisions do contribute to making clear to what is expected in terms of corporate conduct here. There was the U.S. Court of Appeals decision in the case against Wyndham Hotels and Resorts,
very
which
important decision.
Lost, you're familiar with that, a huge case, and they lost, what did they lose, 7 million consumer records or just something
mind-boggling. Well, they had like three different major hacks. So it was one of those, fool me once, shame on you, fool me a third time, I forget what the quote doesn't go that high.
Right. That's exactly right. And the defendant's attorney, I think, used kind of an unfortunate turn of a phrase of saying we are in effect being punished like you would punish a storekeeper for a banana peel on the shop floor. And one of the judges wrote, well, if you have 7 million customers slipping on your banana peels, you've got a real problem. that's not just an honest mistake, So that was kind of a real slap. And I think that industry writ large really thought that that case could be the one that would rein in the FTC and set some limits around the FTC's authority. And instead, it just did the opposite, and it codified the FTC's authority, and it made very clear that, yes, they can play this watchdog role.
Now, going back to Capitol Hill, you talk about some people getting it. Technology is hard for people in general, and then cybersecurity is even worse. I recall one congresswoman saying before she goes to a hearing, her Homeland Security hearings, she has to decide whether she wants to go to sleep that night. And that's, kind of to express how alarming sometimes it is. What percentage, or do you think enough people in Congress, I understand 535 people can't be experts on cybersecurity, but is there enough awareness that you think we're getting the job done, or we can get the job done, I should say?
I would say that I think at this point that the awareness is there. I don't believe it was a couple of years ago, but now it's there, at least to the extent that a member of Congress isn't going to be dismissive of this issue. They all know that this is a pretty important issue, and it's having a lot of impacts on their constituents. Will they do the right thing? Will they put it high enough on their priority list? I think that is always an open question. And just in terms of getting it, You do hear lawmakers who are in real, positions of authority saying things that make you shake your head a little bit and are just sort of at odds with the reality of the cyber world right now and reflect a real, lack of understanding for how the internet works at a basic level or how people engage with technology at a basic level. And this isn't to say that they should be technologists or great experts, there are some basic premises that you would hope that they understand. And oftentimes you're talking to somebody, you're talking to a member of Congress, and you realize, this person just doesn't have any idea of what's going on here or what's happened here. And that can be a little bit disturbing. But they all, at least at this point, know enough to say cybersecurity is important and we're very focused on this. And
My belief has always been, and I think Congress has an important role, and at a certain point, we do have to decide, if business isn't stepping up, and if the FTC, enforcement actions aren't enough, does there need to be certain minimum standards set? I think that at a certain point, we have to get there. But before we get there, the one thing about this type of thing is that it doesn't seem to be an economic – well, let me rephrase that. It doesn't seem to be too huge of an economic consequence in many cases of having a breach. Although for smaller companies, I think it's something like 60% of small companies that have a data breach go out of business within 6 months. So you don't hear a lot about
it's
that.
It's a pretty high number. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, but the bigger companies, it seems like, if it happens, it happens. But it happens to everyone. So there isn't necessarily I don't know if they're calculating a loss of goodwill, although Target definitely lost a lot of goodwill, and some other companies have lost goodwill. And so what I'm getting at is at some point there has to be a market incentive to do the right thing here. And maybe part of the challenge in creating that is people don't know what the right thing is.
Right. No, that's a good point. And where are the motivations in all of this? And the fact is that some of these very, very high-profile breaches have hit companies, and there was a lot of fear that the companies had suffered huge reputational damage, brand name damage. And yet, very, very shortly thereafter, their stock price rebounded, and they were basically where they were before, and it didn't look like there had been any lasting damage. And you look down kind of the chain here, and you know that if there's a false charge on your credit card, typically you're not held responsible for it. The buck gets passed a lot in this space, and so people don't feel directly responsible, directly liable. They're not going to be left holding the bag in this, and that changes your thinking about it. If you knew you would have to pay for it, you're going to be a lot right. more cautious and cyber aware. If you don't think you're going to pay for it, it becomes just another thing that, you know, another thing to worry about at some stage. It's not something that you feel like, oh my goodness, I have to worry about this right now because I'm going to lose a lot of money otherwise.
Right. I mean, I asked Eric Schmidt more or less that same question, and he said, well, it's when boards realize they save money on insurance by having adequate security. You know, it's when they realize that they're not paying out on lawsuits. You know, and so some ways it's a board level thing, but you know, they're seeing a bottom line. But I guess the flip side to that question, and I'm being a pessimist, my own optimist, is if I'm a company that does everything right, you know, let's say I'm in the top, 10% of companies that really get it. And I'm doing, you know, I have Symantec, I have Norton, I have all of them over for breakfast every day. And I say, okay, what should I do today?
Right, right.
And I do exactly what they say. Can you tell me I won't get hit?
Absolutely not. There is no assurance. And if you are, if there is a reason for a sophisticated cyber bad actor to go after you, they have very sophisticated tools. They have very advanced technologies. They can, a determined adversary can get in almost anywhere with it, maybe with a couple of lucky breaks, but using a lot of skill, they're trying to crack the hardest targets out there. So, you know, including the crown jewels of the U.S. government and the financial system and all, they are evolving and developing cyber tools to get past the best defenses that our government and our corporations and our technologists can come up with. So it's a very, very scary adversary in cyberspace. And it requires a very nimble, fleet-footed, adaptive response. And I think getting back to the question about regulation versus industry-led approaches, it's an industry-led approach that we're on right now. And I think we're very much in a proving ground of this. And it's going to have to show effects and demonstrate effectiveness in the near term, or there probably will be rumblings to take a different approach. Right now, I would say we're in the demonstration phase to see if this kind of voluntary industry-led strategy can actually improve security. But the question is out. You mentioned corporate boards. There's a group called the National Association of Corporate Directors, which has gotten very, very engaged on the cyber question. And they're doing events around the country in which they promote. They've put out a guidebook for corporate managers, and which links back to the NIST framework and things like that. But they're being pretty aggressive out in the hustings of trying to get corporate managers to look at this and to incorporate it into their very high-level thinking about risk management. And they want cybersecurity to be up there among the things, among the risks that top corporate officials think about every day. You know, you have to think about natural disasters. You have to think about the sturdiness of the dollar. You have to think about all of these things that could happen, and you try to strategize around that. And cybersecurity typically in the past hasn't been one of those issues that corporate directors would have on their checklist for their meetings. How are we doing on cybersecurity? It wouldn't be asked. Now, right. Increasingly, it is being asked in those contexts, and that's important. That's a pretty significant evolution.
Also, it's interesting. We're going to take a break in a second, but it's interesting if you go to any company and look at the floor plan and look at where the CTO sits versus the CFO, the general counsel, and everyone else, and vis-a-vis the CEO. A lot of times, the CTO is way off with the tech people. Which tells you something. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get me one last question in it, and then Charlie's going to tell us more where you can get more about the book and maybe some other appearances you may have coming up. But we'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report on Cranberry Radio.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let TopSEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Looking for a better way to get more traffic and interaction to your Facebook page? Imagine Facebook interactivity on your page like you've never seen. Introducing your new Facebook marketing fix, ZoSocial, the new and revolutionary way to easily manage and automate your Facebook contest and sweepstakes. Create a fun, easy-to-win contest by writing a simple Facebook post. Watch your post go more viral and generate loads of interaction. Track your traffic and generate email lists with ease. ZoSocial is mobile-friendly and complies with Facebook terms of service. Let ZoSocial give your Facebook page some flash today. Zoom over to ZoSocial.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Here is Bennett Kelly.
And we're back, and we're talking to Charlie Mitchell about his freshly printed book on June 20th, Hack, The Inside Story of America's Struggle to Secure Cyberspace. It's available on Amazon and elsewhere. And I'm going to ask him a little bit about his upcoming promotions, but picking up on your last comment, you know, there's this kind of sense of let's see how this early stage works out. And the problem is that the threats are getting bigger. We're at a point where now we're talking about ISIS getting into a cyber situation, you know, being cyber offensive, and efforts to get at infrastructure. You know, what if someone got a hold of, got into a utility, was able to open a dam? Whatever, you know, that type of situation. And so, you know, whereas before, you know, 5 years ago, we were talking about getting data. In 2 years, we could be talking about making something bad happening that will, you know, in the real world.
Right. That's exactly right. And that is what keeps people up at night. The military has been very, very long concerned about malicious hackers getting into things like the electricity grid, telecommunication systems and all. And even as the Obama administration embraced this voluntary industry-led approach, the top generals would come out publicly and say, we actually need mandatory regulations. They were not trusting of the private sector to secure things like the electric grid. They said, well, we need more in this space. And that's been an ongoing refrain. And you mentioned the potential terrorist threat. With countries like China has been, Chinese fingerprints have been found mapping out things like the natural gas pipeline system and, right, and all of that. And the thinking is they're preparing for a potential future conflict, but they are also restrained in the way that the United States and Soviet Union were restrained during the Cold War. That, you know, you don't necessarily want to launch a nuclear attack, and the Chinese and the United States both are in that position. Right now, we don't want to take down the Chinese electric grid, and they don't want to take down our financial system. It's right, not in either of our interests. But you look at ISIS, and the thinking is that once they have that capability, they will use it. And
right, there's nothing to
there
lose.
Is no restraint on
yeah,
them. Right, exactly. And it's an existential battle for them, and they will attack us as soon as they have the capability to do so. And so the question is, are we doing enough to defend the electric grid? And when you start thinking about bringing down the grid, the implications get very, very scary very quickly. From, you know, our economy runs on a real-time delivery system, and our stores only have a couple of days' worth of supplies. If the grid were knocked down, if supplies couldn't get into the cities in basically within a couple of days, you have mass panic and potentially catastrophic situations on your hands. So this isn't it's not a real theoretical thing. It's something that has major implications. And this need for the private sector to prove that it's up to the task and that it will take care of things on its own, the urgency is there. They have to do this fairly quickly. And it's not just the big major companies and the major infrastructure operators. You mentioned the dam. That apparently was Iranian hackers were rooting around the control system of a small dam in New York. Right.
Yeah.
And the thing is, within our infrastructure, everything is connected to something else. So you get into a small rural electric co-op and you can start working your way up the chain to, you know, a utility that's supplying a major city. It's all connected, and that's the strength of our digital economy, but it's also potentially the Achilles heel.
You know, after World War One, the military did an exercise where they tried to determine, you know, how would we mobilize in response to a foreign invasion, you know, coming from the Pacific or the Atlantic. And as part of the, I think the exercise was done in the Pacific, it took about 2 months to actually get, move troops and equipment to the Pacific in time, you know, as part of this exercise. And one of the people who participated in that that exercise was, I forget what his rank then was at the time, but later became General Eisenhower and then President Eisenhower. And today is the 60th anniversary of one of his major initiatives, which was the highway system, which wasn't just a matter of improving transportation, but he saw it as vital to national security and actually in our economic development. He said this, but he actually mainly saw it as necessary to mobilize. And maybe we're at that moment again.
And maybe, and really a great point within that is, yes, they developed the national highway system with a defense purpose in mind at the root of it, and yet this ended up being the economic driver that created the American century, really. Maybe the same kind of thing can happen here.
Yeah.
And you look at the space program and how many technological spinoffs came out of that. You look at the global positioning system. When the government agreed to open that up to private use, it just spawned entire industries and probably trillions of dollars of activity. So there is a lot to be unleashed here. How that's going to be channeled remains to be seen. It's an interesting question, though, and there are there are so many dynamics at play here that it's just going to be fascinating to see how this unfolds.
Oh, indeed. Now, Charlie, we only have a couple minutes left. If people want to follow you on Twitter or on your website, where should they go?
Sure. On Twitter, I'm at Charlie Reports, and you can see some of the daily coverage that I do. And InsideCybersecurity.com is my publication, and we cover this is for anybody who really needs to know about the in-depth policy moves going on. It's a pretty deep dive, but if this affects your professional life, I would strongly encourage you to check it out. And let's see, as far as tours, I don't have anything scheduled right now, except I'm going to be in Minneapolis in August for the Presidential Cybersecurity Commission meeting there. And that's an interesting process. And if it comes to your town, you should check it out. They were in Berkeley last week, and they are going to be in Houston in July 14th. And then they go to Minneapolis on August 23rd, and I'll be up there, and I'm planning to do some events around the book there. So
that sounds interesting.
That should be interesting, and more to come.
And actually, when we get offline, I may have some possibilities for you on that that end in terms of appearances. So just stay on a sec after we sign off.
Oh, terrific.
But I want to thank you again. It's been a privilege to have you, and especially since the book is so fresh off the press. And everyone, the book is Hack, the Inside Story of America's Struggle to Secure Cyberspace. And it ends on an important note. It really, with you saying, we have to decide if this is really important. And clearly it is, so we have to do something.
That's right. And it's the type of issue that you can't just leave it in the hands of the politicians or the big companies or the system, quote unquote. Everybody's got a stake in this and has a role to play in this. And it's in terms of developing policy and developing a national approach, we're really at the nation right now. So people in all walks of life can have a big influence on how this plays out.
All right. Well, thanks again, Charlie. If you want our show notes, go to our blog at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. On Twitter, let us know your feedback at Cyberlaw Radio. And check us out at the Internet Law Center here in downtown Santa Monica, internetlawcenter.net. We're here to serve you. So this is Bennett Kelly. Join us next week. We'll be talking about the Netroots Nation movement and the rise of progressive politics because of the net. After these next week, and have a happy 4th of July.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of Cranberry News Marketing and Cranberry.fm. Rebroadcasts or retransmission of this content without proper consent is prohibited.